Good afternoon, everyone. We'd like to welcome you to the Mesa City Council study session for the afternoon of November the 18th. All of our council is present. The first item on our agenda for this meeting is to review the items on the agenda for tonight's council meeting. So, council, please refer to that agenda. We do have some interesting stuff on the agenda tonight. We'll be voting on and swearing in a new city magistrate. We'll do that at the very beginning of the meeting. I think we also do have an item or two off the consent. Council, any questions or additional information you would like for tonight's council meeting? Mayor, I'll just... Yes, Mr. Freeman.
Thank you, Mayor. I see item five. I think it's Anyway, it's the Eastern Canal Shared Use Project. So I'm glad to see these projects moving forward in my district as well as our community. It connects all our canal paths in the Salt River Project, allowing us to do that. It's been really neat to see that, as well as the signalization that's going to happen along some of these intersections to allow people, pedestrians, cyclists, to move safely across some of our busiest streets in Mesa. So I'm happy to see this moving forward. Thank you.
You bet. Thank you. So you're happy to see that continue on the consent agenda?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Mr. Brady.
Yes, Mayor and Council, just two items to note that we've had applications withdrawn for two items on the consent under the liquor license. 4A has been asked to be removed, as well as 4I. So we'll remove those from the consent agenda.
Okay, so those are going to be off the consent agenda, and we'll have...
Oh, sorry, off the agenda.
Off the agenda, sorry, completely, so that we won't
consider
that.
Remove from the agenda.
Okay.
Sorry, thank
Makes
you.
Makes sense. Thank you.
Jeremy. Both of those are taken off?
Yes.
Two liquor?
Yes.
Meaning we're still voting on them, they're just not on
nope,
consent?
They're not
to Oh, be they're considered. Totally... Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay.
I know, that's... Sorry, yeah. Completely
so
removed. They're not to be taken action on tonight.
Everything's on consent. Everything else besides those two items.
Those two items. I'm asking that the items that are completely removed from the agenda not to be considered are 4A and 4I.
Okay. Thanks.
Well, just to hopefully there's not a confusion. There is a liquor license application off of the consent agenda that I understand was taken off last
Thursday.
Yeah, and that's
9A.
9A.
That's 9A. So that's the Grab and Go 606 at South on Country Club.
What district is that one in?
It's in Jen's district.
Okay, great.
Okay. Council, any other questions regarding tonight's agenda? Okay, hearing none, the next item on our agenda for this meeting is to hear a presentation and provide direction on the City of Mesa's Interloop District Study. Anna, thanks for changing seats.
Mayor, Council, so for the past year and a half or 2 years ago, the city began a study to basically look at specific mixture of land uses and also to see the proportion and allocation of land uses in the inner loop area of the Mesa Gateway strategic plan, which was approved in 2008. So as a result of this, we hired a consultant who are here today to basically give you the results of the study. And the project manager, Tom, has been working with a consultant. He's been leading the team in doing the study and all the research. So I'm going to pass that on to him.
Hey, Mr. Mayor, members of council, this is Leslie Dornfeld with Planet Communities and Rick Merritt with Elliott Pollock and Company. They're the consulting firm that we hired to institute this study and lead us through that effort. So I'll turn the time over to them.
Thanks, Tom. As Tom mentioned, about a little more than a year ago, we initiated this study, and this presentation will just walk you through what we did and our findings. The purpose of the Interloop study was to provide more definition to the Interloop land uses. As many of you remember, you adopted a plan for the Gateway area, the area immediately north of the Williams Gateway Airport. And that area, that plan had a variety of different districts. And the area that we were asked to look at is the Inner Loop District, which is roughly the area north of the freeway to more or less Elliott Road. And then from the area west of the freeway to the city boundary. This just reviews our process. It was about an, well, we're still in it, but the plan development itself was about an 8-month process. We did some preliminary research where we had Rick and his firm look at some market study stuff. We had an engineer do some infrastructure examinations. We just looked at what the situation was with regards to that. This also included looking at 5 different airports that were identified with city staff. Just to see in terms of what development was like around those airports and the impact of the airport on that development. We presented that information at a public information session in February of 2018, and we took some comments. We had about between 50 and 60 people attend that session, and we did some plan work, and we then came up and we presented alternative land use options for the Inner Loop area. Then we refined those options and we discussed them with stakeholders. There were about 6 different stakeholder groups, 5 or 6 of them. And they ranged from the development community to infrastructure providers, the economic development community. APS was in one of them. So just utility providers. And then we had a community meeting on a refined land use plan where we presented our final draft alternative. And then we created our final report, and that's what we're here to share with you today. Some of the things that we or motivated our thinking in the land use plan was, one, the importance of this area to economic development for the city. We wanted to make sure that whatever was proposed really respected the updated overflight lines and really minimized the impact on airport operations. We didn't want to affect that at all. We wanted to also recognize how important the Elliott Road corridor was and recognizing the investment and time the city has put into that. We felt there were some real opportunities with Warner Road and the Loop 202 in terms of exposure and commercial development. We wanted to look at what decisions and infrastructure were in place. There were some negotiations going on at the time. The idea of the power line that was going to go up, I believe it was Warner Road, and then as well, looking at some of the opportunities to maybe introduce some mixed use and residential development to support the employment in that area. And then at the time, there was also a landowner plan that was submitted, and we considered that plan as well. Based on those considerations, we came up with 3 alternatives. The first one really focused in on maximizing the Elliott Road corridor, putting all the mixed use development around that and creating a very urban environment around it. The second one tried to maximize the opportunity for residential, again, recognizing Elliott Road and also the 202. And then the third one really emphasized the 202 and providing opportunities for high employment uses along it. And again, we weren't asking anyone to pick any one of these. What we were trying to do is get people to talk about what they felt was important so we could bring all 3 alternatives into a single plan. This is the recommended plan. It retains the Elliott Road corridor emphasis. It provides opportunity outside of the overflight zones in the center of the planning area for housing. We tried to keep some mixed-use development along, this is Warner, right? Warner Road, so that people coming in from the airport would maybe be able to take advantage of it. We recognized that it was unlikely that there would be crossings of the canal with the exception of Elliott Road. This is Hawes Road. We didn't want Warner, we knew Warner Road would not cross the canal. And we tried to also, under the overflight lines, which you can vaguely see in that darker pink, try to keep our employment and industrial uses there. And then north of Elliott Road, as a buffer to some of the communities that were on the other side of the utility corridor there, we put some housing as well. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to the economic analysis.
So what we did was take a look at what the potential development is in the area, both residential and industrial or employment. This is the MAG forecast for the Gateway area and the Interloop area, and you can see through 2050, over the next roughly 35 years, 79,000 jobs would be are expected to locate within the entire Gateway area, and within the Interloop area, about 17,000 jobs. That's just a point for you to take a look at and judge everything else. So what we did was we took a look at how much acreage there is in the entire Gateway area. And this is private land ownership, does not include the airport. So we have the Interloop area, the logistics and commercial commerce area, the mixed-use community where Eastmark is currently, and then the private land outside the airport, but within the airport district. You come up with nearly 11,000 acres there. We're using a range, just gross jobs per acre, of somewhere between 17 and 20 jobs per acre. So the total employment range roughly from ranges from 185,000 jobs to nearly 220,000 jobs. And just to give you a point of reference, MAG estimates that in 2015, the entire city had 175,000 jobs. You probably will by 2020 have over 200,000 jobs because there is a lot of growth obviously going on here. But beyond those numbers, when you take into account what's going on at the airport itself, we have the new or the eventual airport terminal site on the northeast that will have a lot of jobs. You have SkyBridge, which is somewhere around 4 million square feet of space. 10 to 12,000 jobs in addition to this. You have the ASU Poly Innovation District. That's expected to generate another 12 to 15,000 jobs. So there's a lot of job potential here, probably getting up to 230 or 40,000 jobs just in the entire Gateway area, just to give you a point of reference. So just to give you a background on what we looked at is how we came up with these numbers. We looked at the area. This is the main curves you see there are the Broadway curve on I-10 and the industrial area that's in western Tempe and southeastern Phoenix. And based on MAG numbers, once again, you get about 17.5 employees per gross acre. And that's gross with taking into account the freeway right-of-way, street rights-of-way, things of that nature. So somewhat of a fairly low number. The other area we looked at is a square mile that is basically from southern up to Broadway on the north and the south and from Priest on the west to Kyrene on the east. And it's a solid industrial square mile, no residential in there. And you get up to about 20 employees per gross acre once again. So we're once again just looking at some very broad numbers on how we would forecast out future development. And lastly is Cotton Center, a fairly new development that occurred just off the 143 on Broadway Road, one of the most successful industrial developments in the entire metropolitan area. A lot of call centers, service centers there. So there is some warehousing there as well. But you're pushing up to possibly as much as 30 employees per gross acre once again. So just to give you background, that's where we came up with our forecast, taking a look at employment development density that has occurred in the area in the past. one of the things that we looked at was trying to give you an example of what this corridor, I didn't miss it. There it is. Okay, what this corridor might look at like in the future, and if you look at the Scottsdale Air Park, it has a lot of mix of retail. There's been quite a bit of housing development that's come into the area now, actually taking out some of the older industrial area, and now we have high density multifamily. But what we envision is, if you look up Scottsdale Road, which is that main corridor through the center of this slide, we look at that as potentially the future Elliott Road corridor, where you're going to have a mix of uses. You're going to have office, you're going to have retail, you're going to have a lot of dense employment. And adjacent to that, and then in this case, is a fairly low-density business park But you end up, in this case, with about 70 employees per acre with what you see there. If you take out some of the residential, you're pushing up more towards 20 employees per acre. So in the plan that, the ultimate plan that we came up with, there's about 12,000 units that were projected out at a pretty high density, at almost 10 units per acre overall. And we're really want to see higher density residential uses here that are less susceptible to noise from the airport, single families more susceptible to noise, multifamilies not. So looking at 12,000 units, that's probably somewhere around 30,000 people could be living here. And on the employment side, about 55,000 jobs. So when you look at it overall, you're about 1.8 jobs per person here. If you look at where the city stands today, you're about 0.37, 0.38 jobs per person across the whole city. So this is really 5 to 6 times more employment here on a per person basis than you typically find across the city. And this is just an example of the types of development we expect to see, residential development we expect to see in the area, triplexes, duplexes, higher density apartments, perhaps even some densities even higher this as you go out into the future. And we've seen 40 to 50 unit per acre development with stacked parking, structured parking, things of that nature in downtown Scottsdale, downtown Tempe. And certainly that's the type of development we could see here over the long term. I think in the near term, you're probably going to see more of the triplex and the higher density condominium type development. And that really brings us to any questions you may have. We do believe that the plan that you've seen is consistent with the Gateway strategic development plan that was approved a number of years ago now. Provides diversity of high density and medium density residential uses and a good mix of employment and residential uses.
Mayor, Council, just to add to it, the consultant gave the same presentation to the Planning and Zoning Board as well, so that's something to really add to it.
Okay, thank you. Questions? Mr. Thompson.
And of course, I'll leave this one off. I want to make sure that we don't get stuck into another site. Was that site 17, where we had a consultant come in and give us options. Option A was mediocre. Option B is mediocre. Option C is mediocre. Which one of these mediocre options do you like the best? This still doesn't do what I want it to do. Do I think there's an opportunity to develop within that area? Absolutely. Do I want the dairymen to be successful? Absolutely. But I also want the city of Mesa to be successful as well. This is one of those things that we've got one shot to make it right. If we screw it up, we run the risk of damaging a major asset to the city. Within the study itself, there were a number of airports, as you alluded to, that were studied, including El Toro, which was closed down because of residential encroachment, Long Beach, Ontario, John Wayne Airport, and in Tucson as well, which all have flight restrictions, and some fairly severe if you've ever taken off from John Wayne Airport. I remember the first time I flew out of John Wayne Airport, I screamed like a little girl when they chopped the engines. So every one of those airports that you studied or that you cited in the study were all impacted by residential encroachment and had flight restrictions, some severe, that were put in place. In your plan, I don't see how that's addressed. The last thing I want to do is put housing into an area directly in the flight path. And believe me, the AOA and the flight path are two separate entities. The AOA has to do with the sound contours of the aircraft when they take off. The flight path is the direction where the aircraft are actually flying. And I have concerns when we start allowing air traffic or houses to be residential to be placed within the flight path of an airport. You know, for 20 years or whenever back in the 80s when Mayor Giles was on council, when the keys to the airport were handed over to the airport authority, you know, the council and Mesa has always pushed against residential encroachment on the airport. They took it upon themselves to be charged with protecting that airport because they see it as such a great asset for our community. It's a $2 billion a year economic generator, not just for Mesa, but the entire surrounding community. And so for that reason, I'm not going to support this plan until we can sit down and have an honest conversation about how we are going to protect the airport. And I'm not seeing that right now in this plan. And so for that reason, I'm not going to be supportive of this plan moving forward.
Okay. Mr. Brady.
Just clarify to the council, all we were doing today is presenting to you the consultant's report, which the council asked us to initiate a year and a half ago, 2 years ago?
That's correct.
So that's all we're doing tonight. Tonight was just to bring you consultants to find. This does not represent the final application, well, I should say the plan that was finally presented to PNZ. We can do that at a later time. Not to say it does, this plan certainly, what you see before you, certainly had an influence on that, but I think there was influences from the planning staff as well as influences from the airport itself. So we'll be glad to bring that plan back to you at some point. Let's be clear, we're not asking council to take any direction or any decision on what the consultants have done. This is to give you background information, and then maybe also if at the request of council, and I think Councilman Thompson has brought up some interesting thoughts of ideas that we need to follow up with and working with the airport. They've already shared with staff some of the ideas of how we could mitigate against flights over this area, and so we're looking at trying to incorporate those. But the intention tonight is just to, again, kind of begin introducing the idea. We don't expect council to be taking any action on this until the first part of the calendar year.
Right. Well, I misspoke, Chris. So yes, you are correct. It's not an action item. I'm just letting folks know that I'm not supportive of this plan as it sits today. You know, another concern that that I have as well is, and Councilmember Luna is well aware of this because he was on council with me at the time, but we shifted a lot of the flight school traffic out of Falcon Field because of this exact situation of allowing encroachment to encroach upon Falcon Field. We shifted it all down to, or a great majority of it, to Gateway Airport, and then here we are considering putting housing and allowing encroachment to take place on the airport, doing the exact same thing that we did with Falcon Field. I'm just at a loss for words for that.
Mr. Luna.
Thanks for the study. If you could go to slide 14, and I can barely read what those areas are, if you can just detail what they are.
This slide.
I can't see it, so maybe the public would want to see it too. Just what they
are. What we tried to do was use the existing general plan categories, so we weren't creating new land uses. So the orange along Elliott Road stands for. Oh, hold on, Rick found a better slide. Hold on. There we go. Thank you. The orange is the transit corridor land use category in your general plan. The yellow is the neo-traditional housing category. And then the ranges for density there are between 8 and 15 or 6 to 12 dwelling units per acre. But overall, that's generally either a very small lot or attached product. The purple areas are for employment industrial, which is more of the standard industrial type of development. And then that would be the darker purple, the lighter purple, or that gray purple. Employment business park is your business park category, which are areas that are the more designed business parks without outside storage. Then to the very northwest on the west side of the canal is the mixed-use activity district, and we left that there to capture. There's a lot of residential development on your border in Gilbert, and so the thinking was is that might be an opportunity to capture some sales tax with some commercial development. And there is some commercial development already there that already exists.
And so the, as far as the residential, you're looking, it looks like you're looking at the six-pack type of housing?
Yeah,
potentially, that
yeah.
would be one, yeah.
Multi-family. Okay. Great. Thank you.
I have a couple questions. Some of the concern that's been expressed about this area generally is prohibiting access to the utility corridor. The thought's been expressed that that's a very valuable industrial property because of its proximity to the power lines, and that a plan that designated space, you know, use other than industrial would not be a good idea because it doesn't take advantage of the asset that is adjoining the property. So I know that for the most part of the northern border here, you have employment, you know, industrial, but there is the enclave of, you know, residential, and I know we have some very outspoken residential neighborhoods that are very much against having industrial on the other side of the corridor from them. So I know that's a neighborhood issue that we've got to resolve. But are there, can you talk about the idea of this, the highest and best use for that property has to be industrial because of its proximity to the power lines? Are there What is the significance of the proximity to the power lines? Are there other ways for that asset to be utilized?
The power lines is an asset. I think you're aware that the Elliott Road Corridor, I believe, starts at Hawes and goes to the east. So that's where most of the high-tech, major industrial development that will be using the power lines is from Hawes to the east. And the plan does respect what we heard from the neighborhood for that area between Hawes and Sossaman.
Yeah,
the north of Elliott. So that's what that is responding to. But it certainly is an asset, and I think the city is taking advantage of it from Hawes to the east where the established Elliott Road Corridor currently exists.
Mayor, I think that's something that NADA might have been involved in addressing that issue with the actual plan. Can you talk about the utility court or the utility easements, please?
Mayor, Council, so there is a power line north of Elliott Road, basically, and that's where there is a existing residential really north the power line. And as part of the plan making, as I think you mentioned about highest and best use, so whenever we're reviewing plans and having these discussions, the highest and best use has to deal with whether it's physically possible to develop, whether it's legally feasible, and also how do we consider the community input. That's also another major part whenever we're making our recommendations. So in this plan making, one of the things we realized, or one of the considerations, was there was an already existing residential to the north of the power lines. And also having over 660 or 600, there was a substantial number of people coming in to really make their recommendations. That was really factored in the plan making process as well. So those were all the factors that were really considered as part. Else, we would not have had the citizen participation process. We would not have had the input. And in addition to that, this was not a vacant land without any residential around it. As we went out to the site, there is a school actually north of it. So there are right now some of the major issues that we are facing, even beside Mesa, is having residents coming out against some of the large industrial uses that are going to certain areas where they are protesting against the uses being incompatible. So this is why we are basically making recommendations that will make sure that we work with the community, because they are going to be there for a long time. And their input was highly considered as part of the proposal before you.
Are there
specific conditions of allowing for easements to connect from the power line to Elliott Road that have been negotiated?
That's correct. So
why don't you talk? I think that's what the mayor's referring to.
Yeah, that was my question. That. Is if we were to use something other than industrial for right along the power lines, does that mean that we've prevented, for example, a business along the Elliott Road corridor if they back up to something that's residential or something that's non-industrial? Are they then precluded from having access to the power lines? Can you address that?
Yes, they will not be precluded. So there is an easement. As part of the plan, there is a power line easement that is being proposed by the applicant, and that's also on the plans as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Can I just follow up on that real quick, Mayor?
Sure.
One of the things I want to make sure, too, and I don't necessarily know that I heard it during any of the community outreach, but there is a buffer between where the power lines are and where any type of development would take place. There's, about an 800-foot buffer on the power line access right-of-way itself. And then beyond that, most of your Niagaras or Googles or Apples or, you name the data center that wants to be there or the company that wants to be there, they usually have a pretty significant setback as well. So it's not like the folks that live in Boulder Creek are going to open their front door and look out and see this big block wall right directly in front of their house. It's going to be more than likely a quarter mile away or pretty close to that. Is that correct?
Mayor, Council, so there will be a requirement for the residential to be set back 300 feet from the power line. And that's basically, if you look at the residential to the north is approximately set up that way, and we'd actually fly drone pictures to really capture that. So this proposed residential, if it's ever built, it will be the same as what is already existing north of that power line.
Okay, so that would be the new residential, if there were any, would have that setback.
Yeah, and Mayor and Council, as you may know, we already are running into challenges even with the Google side as far as setbacks from the back line, because that's usually where the electrical receiving and substations are. So we'd have to work through that with an application on any part of this, right? Whether it's between Sossaman and Hawes, but certainly there's still homes that are backing up between Hawes and the freeway, Sossaman all the way to the canals. So those are definitely we would have to look at providing the amount of setbacks to protect those residents that are already there that actually face the power lines today.
All right, and I think one of the biggest concerns, Chris, that I've heard from the community is that they didn't want industrial directly adjacent to Boulder Creek Elementary School. And so if there was green space in between or something of that nature, I think that would satisfy the needs of the community that are concerned about any type of development other than residential taking place directly adjacent to the elementary school. Correct?
I mean, I was in those. I mean, you're right. I think that's the sentiment that I've seen through a lot of email activity. And I think, I mean, I'm not going to speak for the concern. We've had this discussion quite often, this piece between Sossaman and Hawes and north of Elliott. Is there a way to create a transition between the residential and specifically the school to the north? And is there a way to transition it down to the Elliott Road corridor? And I think, and I don't know, I think that the sense was in this little area where it seems to be the highest sensitivity to the impact to the neighborhood would be to try to do like for like. I think the request from the neighborhood, as I recall, what was shared with me is they wanted to see similar development south of them, and yet we recognize we want to take advantage of both the power and certainly Elliott Road. We think Elliott Road is a significant economic opportunity corridor, whether it's from the 202 all the way over to Power Road. So we wanted to make sure we preserve that, and so allowing for kind of a buffer transition of uses from the north, existing residential and school, south to a certain point, and then transitioning to the harder, more commercial, non-residential on Elliott. Now, at the same time, I guess there's also a feasibility of, how much space can you give to squeeze in residential between these employment centers and still make it viable, I think is kind of the balance we're trying to achieve.
Right, and I agree. I mean, obviously from the discussion we're having, there's ample room for improvement over this, and that's why I don't necessarily like the layout of this. I think there's options for and more than likely room for residential on the north side, but ultimately my goal and this council's goal should be the protection of Gateway Airport, and that's what I will continue to do and fight for while I'm on council.
Okay, so back to the question of the whether or not we're precluding access to the asset of the power line if there was something other than industrial right there. You're saying through the use of easements. I assume even if there were an industrial user located there, they wouldn't just simply string a cable up to the power lines behind them. It has to go through a process of a substation and being routed, you know, through the correct commercial line. So is there a way to protect the access to that asset and have something other than a heavy industrial user along the power line?
Yeah, and I think that's what we want to do, Mayor. Yeah, I think the answer is yes. And the reason we want to do this is our experience has been east of the 202, where we have large-scale data centers that are south of Elliott today, mm-hmm. right, that are coming in, and they want to have access to the power of the power line on Elliott. The challenge became is how to get that corridor, that easement from the north all the way down from the power corridor down to Elliott and then down to the data center. And it took a lot of work and effort to kind of maneuver that around. Thank goodness for the city of Mason and its generosity in working out a deal with SRP to allow it to go along some of the edges of some of our retention basins, which made sense. So kind of seeing ahead of time, you know, now we kind of have a blank slate. I think the staff has said, wait a minute, let's not put ourselves in that position. Let's negotiate now early on that we have, like the mayor saying, access to these power lines through some kind of dedicated easements, or understood that we will have easements going from the corridor down to Elliott Road, so we don't preclude that strong non-residential development, commercial development on Elliott Road. I think under my understanding, Mayor, that's a condition that's already included.
Okay. Great, thanks. And then I think, again, the area that we're focusing on primarily here seems to be Elliott Road Corridor north up to the utility corridor. The bright yellow designation, the TD-C, my guess is, can you talk about that? Is that the hope is to preserve the commercial industrial feel of the Elliott Road Tech Corridor along that stretch, is that correct? And more specifically, the question is, would housing be allowed under that category? And if so, could we still, though, express a preference for not having residential development being directly on the Elliott Road corridor?
Mayor, members of the council, I believe, just looking up your specific land use category, I believe housing is allowed.
Mayor, council, so housing is allowed in the new traditional neighborhood, but the difference is we are looking into a zoning category that will ensure that it's not a standalone residential, which is where most of the concerns are. We are looking into a zoning district that will ensure that there is vertical integration of mixed uses, basically to create that activity in that Elliott Road corridor, because we feel like that will be the area where you want to generate that activity. And then as you move into outside that area, your uses in terms of residential kind of reduces, or the intensity reduces. And then when you get to the 202, that's where you want to put your commercial uses. So there is that kind of transition. So in terms of the TDC area, it will allow certain residential, but it will not allow standalone residential. It's going to be mixed use residential.
Okay.
Members of the council, our projections for this mixed-use activity district, this CSD, at this point in time, we've only projected for the entire quarter 900 units. So the intent of the plan is that it's a very heavily office commercial quarter, recognizing that there may be some interest in creating some level of high-intensity mixed use, vertically mixed use, residential with commercial on the bottom development.
And you can see on the top part of this chart where we are showing that 30% of the acreage in those mixed use districts in the transit corridor would be residential. So it's a mixed use corridor, yes.
But as you describe it, it'd be a more high density residential as opposed to single family homes, where you're more likely to have people in their backyards and outdoors experiencing overflight noise.
Yes. Is that right? Actually, Mayor, members of the council, I think this land use category in your general plan prohibits single family homes.
Okay. Is there, I know I'm kind of zoomed in, there's some hash marks, you know, on the TDC to the east.
Yeah.
Is there something significant about that? I'm just curious to know what that means.
Mayor, members of the council, those hash marks indicate the noise exposure in that. Oops, wait a minute. Sorry about that. That one is
no residential
zone.
Oh, okay. So even though it is in TDC, it's designated non-residential.
Right. And that, again, is with what respect to what Rick said, we really wanted to celebrate that Elliott Road corridor and the work you were doing on there.
And because it's adjacent to the 202.
Yes.
That's what makes this part of Elliott different than the rest of Elliott going to the interior, is the idea, and this is where we had lots of interesting discussions with the applicant, is this preservation of the 202 freeway exposure and not having residential, making that prominent that it would be non-residential commercial use. So I think that transition from the 202 west on the Elliott Road and that hash mark, Mayor, is to make that emphasis.
Okay. That's one of the things I liked about this plan, is to my impression that there is no residential along the freeway corridor.
Mayor, members of the council, that's correct. And the use of the Employment Business Park, to echo what Mr. Brady said, is to allow that the freeway's elevated in many areas along there, so it would allow those higher rise building product to get constructed next to the freeway, and it provides a kind of high-end Class A type exposure that might be attractive to some type of businesses looking for an airport location and a freeway location in a prestigious quarter.
Well, I'm just going to express the opinion that I like the hash mark in a non-residential designation. I would like to see that extended, frankly, just along at least the frontage of the rest of Elliott Road, just so that we preserve the look and feel of a commercial industrial corridor, even though perhaps, you know, in the property immediately, you know, behind, there is this kind of high-density housing that has all the noise attenuation and not single family. But that's for another day when we discuss the zoning case, I guess. Another question I had, obviously a lot of focus of the concern here is the noise issues presented by the AOA 1 and AOA 2 and AOA 3 districts that are there. Can you remind me what those districts mean and what the significance of them is? For example, I'm under the impression that AOA 2, you can build residential. You just need to make sure you have noise attenuation built into the homes, but it's not illegal. AOA 3, perhaps, I think you need to probably have avigation easements, but there's no requirement that there be. I guess I'll stop guessing what the requirements are. Can you tell me what it is?
Mr. Mayor, members of council, the airport overflight areas, or the AOA areas, are found within our zoning code, but they're also an implementation of the airport land use compatibility study themselves. The AOA 1 areas are all within the 65 noise delineation lines as you come off the runways. The AOA 2 areas are between the 65 and the 60 noise delineation lines. And the AOA 3 areas, everything that is outside of that but still inside of the airport influence area, it's about a 90 square mile area that's in the AOA 3 areas. And it's exactly right. In our zoning ordinance, we restrict certain land uses within those noise contours. The AOA 1s and AOA 2s, single-family residential is strictly prohibited. There's the opportunity with council use permits to consider some higher density. Those would be probably in very rare instances. But in the AOA 3 areas, that's predominantly most of Southeast Mesa and most of Southern Gilbert is in that AOA 3 area. And within our zoning ordinance, we've back that up with the requirement for navigation easements, for noise attenuation within construction, notification to the airport. The FAA study slipped my mind. 7640 for compatibility with construction. All these things are built into the zoning ordinance, but they're all part of that land use, airport land use compatibility plan to protect the airport from those types of encroachment of land uses that might be considered incompatible, particularly with those overflights and those noise contour areas.
And Mayor, just make mention, Mayor and Council, is my understanding, and I heard this from the airport, so Tom, correct me wrong, the city of Mesa is the only city that establishes the AOA 3 and enforces it like we do. There are other AOA 3 areas around the airport, but none of the other communities establish any kind of zoning requirements like we do. So we are the only ones that acknowledge there's an AOA 3 and impose these navigation easements and the studies from the FAA. So we are trying to take an extra step in trying to mitigate against this. I think there's an opportunity also to continue to have further discussions, and other mitigation and disclosure items have come up in the AOA 3 area that we need to work on too.
Okay, thank you.
I have a question in regards to that. If I understand you correctly, Chris, you're saying none of the other cities make any type of ordinances around AOA 3, meaning that you could build as much residential as you wanted. There's no...
That's what I was told.
Okay, I just want to make sure that was the point.
Yeah,
that you're trying to make.
Yeah, my point is, I think Mesa acknowledges the concerns. I think that Councilmember Thompson and we've built into our zoning outside of what anybody else is doing in the area, additional disclosures and notices about the activity in this area.
Above and beyond is what you're saying?
Yes, sir.
And so does any of the residential in this plan fall within an AOA 2 designation or no? So this is all residential designation, AOA 3?
No, Mayor Giles, Councilman Whitaker, if you look at this, is there an arrow?
Yeah,
oh, yeah, there's the arrow. If you look at that kind of very light purpley line here, that is the AOA 2 area or the 60 DNL line. There is no residential within it, but there is a portion of the study area that does fall within the AOA 2 area. And then a very small portion of the study area south of the 202.
Yeah.
Just along the 202 falls within the AOA 1,
My apologies.
But there are no residential.
Yeah, I chose the wrong words.
I just wanted to make sure that we were clear.
No residential falls within AOA 2, but your study addresses AOA 2.
That's correct.
Yeah, okay. Thanks.
Thank you. The area of your study is about, am I going to say 3,000 acres, 2,000 acres?
It's about 3,100 acres, yeah. Mr. Mayor.
3,100?
3,200
acres. Okay. Thank you. Jen, I know you had a finger up earlier. Do you have questions? Or...
So currently we have quite a bit of residential in AOA 3 in this area, right? Is that correct? Not in this planned area, but in district around the gateway.
Well, there are residential in AOA 3. I think there are a number of people even here that have houses or their residential homes are in the AOA 3.
So the Boulder, whatever is it called?
Boulder Creek.
Boulder Creek is in AOA
3?
Yes.
Correct. Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Duff, the AOA 3 area goes almost all the way up to the US 60 in most instances. So all the neighborhoods in Mesa, north of this area up to the 60, and then over to the east, all of Eastmark, all of Cadence, those neighborhoods to the east are also within the AOA 3 area.
So that's a great deal of this district.
It's a very large area.
All right. And then... So, Councilmember Thompson, just so I can understand your thought process on this, are you suggesting no residential in this planned area, or what is your concept?
I think there's opportunities for residential. I'm not exactly sure that I like how they're wanting to zone where the residential is at. And again, I go back to what I was saying earlier, the difference between AOA and flight path. The AOAs, Mr. Brady and I both live in the same neighborhood. We both fall within the AOA 3. We both, I'm sure, I remember I did, when we bought our house, we signed a piece of paper that says, you live near an airport, you can expect aircraft flying over your house. And they do, quite often. the difference is the flight path itself has always been between the power lines and Elliott Road. So if you walk out or if you're out at Gateway and you watch the aircraft take off, the commercial aircraft, the air passenger aircraft, they climb high and they bank hard because they're trying to make that Elliott Road corridor. And that's traditionally why, if you look on the other side of the 202, the city has not allowed residential to be built, you know, the quarter mile north and quarter mile south of Elliott Road. The previous councils put in place that there will be no development, no residential development along north or south of Elliott Road for a quarter mile from the power lines to Elliott Road, and then from Elliott Road south a quarter mile. So even if you, and I keep wanting to scan the map, slide the map over, but even if you go all the way over to Apple, you'll see that there is a corridor beyond Apple where there's no residential, and there's no residential planned. And that's specifically because of the flight path that was developed for the aircraft leaving Gateway Airport. So the aircraft can't necessarily climb straight out, because once they approach the 60, they start entering Sky Harbor airspace. So they are forced to bank hard to try to make that Elliott Road corridor. During inclement weather, they do fly right over my house. They also fly right over Gilbert as well on their approach. And so don't get stuck on the AOAs as much as you do the flight paths, because you have an aircraft full of passengers. You also have small aircraft because it still is considered somewhat a GA airport. So you do have a lot of small aircraft in and out of there. You have military aircraft flying in and out of there. And, you know, once SkyBridge is up and running, hopefully we'll have cargo aircraft flying in and out of there that are all going to be less than 2,000 feet climbing out over these houses, making a hard right bank turn to make Elliott Road. And so the flight path takes you directly over all of the yellow in the middle and the TDC portions in the middle. And that's my concern, is that encroachment on the airport is going to have an impact at some point in time on the airport.
So the proposed residential areas that are in the light yellow or kind of whitish yellow is MBH?
Mm-hmm.
That is satisfactory or no? So above and below the TDC, there's a light.
I'm less concerned with the portions to the north. I still have issues because I think there's great economic development opportunities that we would be blocking out by allowing residential in there. My larger concern is the yellow south of the TDC. And thank you, Mayor, for also agreeing that TDC should be non-residential. And so my biggest concern is if you look at 1 week's worth of overflights of this airport in and out of Gateway Airport over this area, you can barely see any of the landmass below it. It's completely covered by aircraft flying in and out. And I think if you were to take an overlay of the aircraft on just 1 week's worth of flights, you'd be astonished how much activity flies over this area. And we're actually talking about putting residential housing in that area. And I think it's just a recipe for disaster that's going to field calls to the airport for noise complaints. It's going to field calls to future councils for noise complaints. And it's eventually going to impact flight operations at the airport. We've seen it across the nation. And there was 5 airports that were in the study that all 5 have been impacted by residential encroachment just like this.
So the area north would be no.
This portion, no. This portion, sorta.
Okay.
Mayor, Council, so just to add to the discussion, I know one of the things they did was the airport actually last year did an airport compatibility study. And as part of this study, they highly took that study into consideration to come up with their proposal. So this study aligns with the airport compatibility study that was done. And even with our discussion with the airport as well, the airport would have been here. If, to my understanding and my conversation, the plan as it stands, they do not have concerns. If you remember, we had Gallery Park that came before you a couple of months ago, and the airport basically were here to express their opposition because of resident, well, kind of high-density residential that were going to go into the AOL2 as a part of a conditional use permit. So this study considered all those studies that has been done to really merge them together.
But then again, Nana, the Gallery Park, that piece was not directly in the flight path of the airport. It was within the AOA2, and they are doing some sound mitigation, but it wasn't directly in the flight path itself. And that's my concern, is the flight path. Get away from the AOA discussion, focus on flight path.
Yeah, I think, Mayor and Council, the hard thing, it's hard to get away from the AOA conversation because that's what FAA holds us to as far as noise. Because you can have a lot of planes flying over top of you, but you don't know the elevation of those and what the nuisance it's creating below. There's no doubt that they're creating noise, but the standard that's being used, and I think what's important too is understand, was mentioned, this AOA 2 and AO 1 are fairly recent. Previously in prior councils, those delineations had a much broader area and were bending to the right, bending to the east. What's happened as the airport engaged in the update of this report 3 years ago, 2 years ago, whenever.
They've been updating over the last couple of years.
When they do these studies, they look at not just what's happening today, but they do project forward. So I want to make sure the council understands that the cargo, anticipated cargo activity is included in the modeling for these contours that you see today. So they meet with the airport and talk about what is your activity projected to be like over the next 10 years. And so that gets included in this. They talk about the type of aircraft that fly and the routes they fly. And so when council is looking at these contours, that comes from the airport and their consultants and projecting out to the future. And what's happened is that contour did shrink significantly just because one of the types of planes that are flying out of here and the fact that they've been able to get different procedures and the runways are different. And so anyway, it's a very dynamic process, but I just want to understand things. This is fairly new for the airport, these contours, but it does project out into the future.
I have a question. Can we not work with the airport air traffic controllers to, if the concern is that the planes take off and bank hard right, can we not like work with them to say, when the planes turn right, that they have to fly over the utility corridor where it's not going to be any residential anyways? Is that not something we can work with the airport?
So Mayor Councilman Whitaker, today, for the last 10 years, I would say, there has been a procedure that is shared with all the pilots out of the airport. It's called the fly-friendly procedure, and that's what they're asked to do. They're asked to come up and to bank along as close as possible within the alignment of that utility corridor. So that's what's happening today.
Okay, great. And my other question is, is the airport on board with this plan, or do they have objection?
Mayor, Council, the airport, to the best of our discussion, in support of this plan, they actually showed up at planning and zoning and spoken from the records. The airport director said, this is the best you could get from an airport, saying they do not oppose. That's almost close to saying we are basically in support, but based on their procedure, they don't really go to any land use hearing to express their absolute support for the plan.
So they're not expressing explicit support, but they're also not saying that they oppose it, which is the best we're going to get out of them, is what you're saying.
I wouldn't say the best. Based on their land use compatibility, this is a plan that aligns with their land use compatibility study.
Okay, and the other, did you guys look at flight paths at all when you put this plan together? Was that considered, or did you just consider the AOA?
Mayor, Councilman Whitaker, actually, we did look in detail at the overflights as well as the AOAs, and as Councilman Thompson mentioned, they are very dense over the area, but we do have in the back of the plan on the last page a map that shows the large and smaller aircraft flight tracks And the overall lines is where they go over that study area.
Okay, great. And I have one last question, if I may. Rick, in your opinion, does this proposal adequately have enough employment use zone, or would you recommend a different mixture of employment use versus residential?
Mayor, Mr. Whitaker, we think the mix of employment is very good, and there's plenty of land beyond even the inner loop to accommodate more employment, so we don't see it as a burden or anything on the future growth of this area.
All right, thank you.
Jen, were you done?
Just one quick question, and I know Frank, Council Member Haredi has a question. So if a plane is flying over the flight path versus, let's say, a half mile or a mile away, is the noise significantly different?
Mayor, Council, this would be a good question for the airport director, but my understanding is that's why we do have the noise decibels. So the AOA 1, the noise decibels is higher because of the noise, and then as you go outside, because the plane basically goes at a high elevation, which reduces the noise.
I would say maybe in the AOA 3, because I don't know what the elevation is at the AOA 3, where if it's just taking off, of course, that noise is more, it's louder, of course, it's closer to the ground, versus a certain elevation within a distance, it might be fair, about the same given the elevation of the plane at that point.
Mayor Councilmember, the 65 and 60 DNLs, it's decibel noise level. The way they calculate that is they look at time of day. So for example, things are quieter at night, so the planes seem louder. And so that DNL represents, it's my understanding, an average of the noise over the time of day and also the level that they're flying at. So based on where the planes are in terms of altitude and overall the number of flights over the day, there's some modeling that I couldn't begin to explain to you that comes up with that 65 level. And they equate those noise levels to things like standing next to a loud lawnmower or a leaf blower, which is, I think, 60, if I'm not mistaken. It might be 65, a loud truck backfiring. And so if you want, we could probably find those noise equivalents and provide them to you.
Not necessarily in, I'm talking about in the TDC, the orange area, versus on either side of that in the whitish areas. Would the noise be significantly different in that AOA 3, the flight path, versus a half mile or a mile on either side of it where you have residential?
We don't have a model that, I mean, would logically would be, the answer would yes, but we don't have a model that tells you.
It would be less than 65. Yeah. It would be less than 60 outside of that level. If it's 59 or 52, I can't give you that answer.
Right. Okay, thank you.
Frankie.
Yeah, real quick. Is this all annex City of Mesa, or is there a county? Is there a mix of county and City of Mesa? Okay.
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Heredia, the area between Elliott and Warner Roads is still within the Maricopa County. Everything else is within the City of Mesa. The city limit is along Power Road to the flood control channel. So if you're looking at this map from the flood control channel over to the 202 is all within Maricopa County right now. Okay. There is a small piece along Sossaman that juts down, but for the most part, everything between Elliott and Warner is still County Island.
Okay. And then on the jobs numbers, is what type of jobs, based on your examples, do these types of developments or these layers, what are the types of jobs that kind of go into these? I know it depends on businesses, but what have you seen around other airports, the types of jobs that come in there?
Mayor and Councilman Heredia, it really is just a huge mix. As I showed in the examples, in some developments is very intensive, a lot of call centers, things of that nature. In other areas, it's warehousing where you don't get a whole lot of employment. So it's really just a general mix the numbers that we're using right now.
And do you see, based on those jobs, that maybe individuals would like to live around those areas? Or do you see, you know, just sporadic across the different examples that you looked at?
I think what we're really looking at today with this plan is that it'd be a work, live, and play type environment. So the people could work close by. It could be a lot of high-tech jobs or more intensive jobs that are in office-type developments. But it would be a very good mix, particularly along the Elliott Road corridor.
Thank you. Mr. Thompson.
You know, my vision, my goal for this area is, and I've said it, gosh, since 2014 when I was campaigning, is that Mesa has always been a net exporter of labor. We send all of our citizens to Scottsdale and Chandler and Phoenix and beyond to work. What's wrong with reversing that role, bringing in the employment, and then bringing people in from other cities to come to our city to spend their gas money, their coffee money, their bagel money, their lunch money, their dinner money, and then going back to their cities to sleep at night and work in our areas. Let's be a net importer of labor instead of a net exporter of labor and keep our citizens right here in Mesa.
Thank you, Council. Any more questions?
So this, obviously we're hearing about the strategic plan. There's a project that's proposed for this area. Does that project meet all the specifications of that, or are they going to have to adjust to confine to some of these things that you guys have defined within this plan?
Mayor, Council, there is a rezoning case that basically had been under review for over a year now because they had to wait for this study to be completed so we can make sure that their proposal fit into the study. So but to answer your question, yes, the proposed land use fits into this study as well. And I may want to add to it, at the end of the day, this is the zoning case that we will be considering is 1100. The inner loop portion of the Gateway Strategic Plan is 3100. So this is a portion, or the zoning case is just a portion. And also the issue about proportion of land uses, the balance between housing and employment, this is one study that has actually taken into consideration those. Most of the time, the uses or proposals that come before you are basically isolated. You either get a commercial use or you get a residential. And the struggle that we have as a planning division is basically having a place-based kind of uses where you can have people going to work and people living there. And this is a study that has considered a whole area to make sure there is a proportion and balance of land uses. So they've done a really decent job, and my recommendation is for us to continue to have such conversations so the whole city actually can have those mixture and balance of housing to employment ratios.
Thanks.
So, Mayor and Council, real quickly, let me put this in context. I think it's important. So this is a study of 3,200 acres that encompasses this inner loop area. The application that went through planning and zoning was 1,200 acres.
Yeah.
Total of that, about 900 acres is not in the city today.
Is correct.
Okay, so that's the perspective of the opportunity. We wanted to bring Council and P&Z of this larger picture, the context, to understand kind of the vision of the larger 3,200 acres as you consider the 1,100 acres, and then also as we work with property that is not in the city today, and how do we bring it in under a planned process of annexation. So that's kind of what you'll be seeing as we move forward with the presentations here.
Okay, thank you very much.
And real quick, I just want to, in case Council doesn't know, this entire area is within an opportunity zone as well.
All right, thank you. I know you did this at our request. No good deed goes unpunished, so thanks for coming and taking the heat for this. We appreciate it.
So, Mayor, we'll probably bring, we'll work council, maybe bring some additional presentations and specifically related to the proposals before you, maybe bring some more specific information about the areas around the airport and flight tracks and AOAs. If there's some other information the council would like to hear or have presented, please let me know and we'll try to schedule this. I know it's going to be a little bit challenged between now and the end of the year, but if we can find a study session to do that, we will. We just want to give council as much information as possible before we begin the formal posting process and put the zoning case on your agenda for consideration.
Sound good, council?
Good.
All right, thank you very much. Thanks for your work. The next item on our agenda for this meeting is item 3. That's to acknowledge receipt of various board minutes. Is there a motion to that effect? Thank you, Mr. Freeman and Mr. Thompson. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Item 4 is to hear reports on meetings and conferences attended. Council members. Yes, Mr. Thompson.
I was honored to represent the city of Mesa at the White House meeting with Secretary Ben Carson to talk about some of the barriers to workforce housing. So it was interesting, diverse group of legislators, council members, mayors from across the U.S. There's probably 20 to 25 of us gathered around the table having a one-on-one conversation with Secretary Carson. So a lot of good things that are working out there. There's also a lot of things that aren't working, a lot of things that that different cities and municipalities have done that developers in the end have ended up taking advantage of cities. And so we're looking to develop some best practices, and I'm looking forward to working with our regional partners around us to really dive into what can we do as a region to do a better job of removing some of those barriers to allow for workforce housing.
Thank you for representing us there. Other, we had a busy weekend. Who wants to tackle what they did this weekend? Mr. Luna.
Today, over at the Mesa Arts Center, Visit Mesa was recognized, as well as City of Mesa, first in U.S. autism certification. So that's a real honor to our city and to Visit Mesa. And so we're very proud of that recognition. And then last Thursday, Urbex Resources, we had a ribbon cutting over at Falcon Field District, and they grew out of Launch Point. So it's Mesa's technology accelerator. Urbex is a great story, and it emanated out of Mesa, so we're excited about that. And co-founders Nico Cuevas and Adam Small doing a great innovative job, and they're basically using purifiers, natural graphite purifiers, so that was really exciting.
That's great. It was fun to see them move from the city incubator to this successful location.
Right.
Yeah. Great. Jen.
Of course. I'll cover some of the exciting things that happened. We had on the Saturday before last, I think it was the 9th or something, we had a Guerrero Park mural paint, a community paint. We have murals all over one long wall in Guerrero Park, so check it out. There'll be a few other murals spread through the neighborhood, inching its way into closer to Broadway. And so that's an exciting thing for the community. We had about 250 people show up. The mayor was there to paint along with it, with everybody else, and that was exciting. We had a neighborhood leadership class this past week in which neighborhoods took on projects in their neighborhoods. So thank you, Neighborhood Services. And the next class will be getting involved with committees and boards within the city advocating for your neighborhood. And that is on December something. It's on the website. Lost my notes on that. In downtown Mesa over the weekend, we had the Mesa Music Festival. This is what, the fifth year? But this was absolutely a grand year for the Mesa Music Festival. We had lots of people turn out, amazing talent, over 200 bands. The businesses that I saw that were open had people lined up buying things. Chupacabra reported they had their biggest day since their opening, including their grand opening, and during the music festival. So it was a big success, and we look forward to their return, the music festival return next year, be bigger than ever. Creative Catalyst had a brunch at Art Space. A lot of good energy around there. I think it was the best event I've attended at Art Space, so watch what they're doing with the artists there. I attended a citizenship fair in which at the LDS Center on Horn and 2nd Avenue, and ways for our citizens to take those steps for their citizenship. And, of course, Veterans Day. We had a lot of celebrations with the Royal Air Force, recognizing the cadets who lost their lives training at Falcon Field during World War II, and the Veterans Day Parade. So that's a quick synopsis.
That was a good one. Thank you. Mr. Freeman.
Yeah, thanks, Mayor. I went to a lot of these activities with my council members, including the Veterans Day Parade, the RAF Memorial Service. That was really neat. I did have a town hall at Polson Junior High, and it had a good turnout, as well as tomorrow night we'll have another community meeting in Lehigh and check their pulse out there, see what they're up to. That's it. Thanks.
Thank you. Let me just say amen to the Mesa Music Festival. I just want to highlight, I'm excited because I think we took a drone shot at late on Saturday afternoon, and I'm excited to see the footage because it was wall-to-wall people, you know, all the way from McDonald and Robeson through the downtown area. It's going to be really fun to see. It's fun to see that downtown activated so well and the huge crowds that were there for the performances at night, too. So just amen to what Jen described earlier. Also, I just wanted Mr. Luna's comment about the autism certification. I think you said this, but Mesa is the first and only city in the nation right now that has this certification in the world. So I think going forward, you know, people are going to say, hey, I heard about this place in Mesa, Arizona. You know, let's check it out. What are and this is a really good idea, and it's an idea that I think is very compatible with who we are as a community. You know, we Mesa is a very compassionate community. So I'm just made the comment this morning. I'm very proud of Mesa for being the first of I'm sure what will be many cities that take this step. I was out of town a couple of days last week. I was at the invitation and on the dime of NYU, went back there for a couple of days on an institute on smart cities. Good things will come out of this. There's some really good ideas that they helped us to develop that I brought back and shared with staff. So I think you'll see, I'm very optimistic that some good smart city stuff, which is in Mr. Luna's category of concerns, is going to do well. Anything else you'd like to share with us, Council? Mr. Brady, what does our schedule look like?
Well, it looks pretty good for Council. We won't be having another study session or Council meeting until Monday, December 2nd. There's conferences and, of course, Thanksgiving coming up. And then just a reminder that Mary Main Street kickoff and tree lighting will be Friday, November 29th from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. in downtown Mesa at 1 North McDonald's. We invite everybody to come down for that free event.
I've heard that we might have a visitor from the north.
Oh, very good.
All right.
Mayor made this special invitation.
I don't want to promise anything, but. All right. If there's nothing else, is there a motion to adjourn this meeting? Thank you, Mr. Luna. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned.